Hey, welcome to the Naughty Shaman Podcast. This is Natalie Griffin, and I am so excited to be sharing tonight's podcast with you. I'm here with Jackie Brown, a great friend of mine, and we are at Duncaster, which is a continuing care facility for 55 and older. And Jackie, I gotta tell you, when I first met Jackie, she came into my office, and I think, were you 89 when I met you, or 88?
88.
And I thought, oh, this will be a nice session. I wonder what we're going to talk about. And Jackie sat down and said, do you remember what you said?
Yeah. I'm not using my potential.
I know. I want to give more. I'm not using my potential.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And then I think after that, you started doing workshops here at Duncaster for everyone.
When I first moved in, there were so many people from Connecticut, and I did not know one soul in Connecticut. I sort of felt out of the box, like I didn't fit in. And after a while, I lost my voice. I didn't say what I thought, because I just sort of felt like an outsider. Then when I met Natalie, I didn't really tell her the whole thing. I just said, I'm not using my potential, and it's nice to meet you. And when I came back, she did her thing, whatever it was. And when I came back the next week, I went down to the program manager and I said, Janet, I'd like to give a lecture. And she said, really? And so that's how it started. And now I can't be quiet.
Thank God. I'm so glad. Every time I hear you tell stories, they inspire me. Because, you know, I told you this when we first met. I lost my parents when they were really young. And so I was a little bit afraid of growing older. You know, I'm in my midlife, and to see you out there giving lectures and inspiring people and being creative and not being like everyone around you and still having such companionship, it inspires me, Jackie. Every story you tell inspires me.
Well, thank you. That's good, because life can be as exciting as you want it to be. And as long as you think of life that way, then you aren't like I was when I first came. You'll just do what is in your heart and what you think you can contribute to the world, which the world needs everyone to do their share.
There are so many people, though, that I think are afraid. My dad used to say, some people die with a song in their heart. I think that there are a lot of people, for some reason, afraid of living life the way they know they can, or from the heart. How did you get to be the way you are? Like, it's very brave to live life like that.
Well, everyone says I'm brave, but I don't feel brave. I just do what I want to do. I come from a plains state, Nebraska. I was born there. And all my relatives out there were hardworking people. And I actually was in the dust storm when I was a little girl. We had to go down in the root cellar like Dorothy did in The Wizard of Oz. And then the next day the grasshoppers came. And my aunt said, don't go outdoors. They're too slippery to walk on.
And the grasshoppers.
The sky was black. And of course they ate all the corn, crops. And, my uncle said, that's all right, Aunt Helen. Next year we're going to have a really good corn crop. And that's how I was brought up. No matter what happens, next year will be fine. So can't worry about it.
Wow. That's amazing that you're in a dust storm in Nebraska. It is just like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz.
It was.
I love it. So you had a lot of adventures in your life. You were, where did it all begin? Because I know you were married and then you traveled and there was a lot of story in there.
Well, I think my dad instigated all of this in me, because he was an English professor at Syracuse University. And instead of talking about politics when we had Sunday dinner, he would say, okay, Billy and Jackie, where would you like to go in the world and why? And so when we were little, we knew all about Africa and South America and North Pole, because we had to look it up and tell why we wanted to go there. And he he was sort of ahead of his time and very interesting person. And he sort of, when we were very young, he would give us a wild flower book and a tree book, and he'd take us all through the woods every day until we knew everything, and told stories about the tree spirit and the brook fairies, and that's how it all started. I just believed everything was very exciting.
And this is from your dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you decide to leave Nebraska, or what happened?
I didn't decide to. I was 1 year old.
Oh. Well, then probably you didn't decide that.
And my dad was a very, very, very young, early 20 English professor in Syracuse. I lived the first year in Nebraska while he got settled here. And then they put me in a basket and got on the train, and we came to Syracuse. And I think a must have gotten in my blood then.
Traveling. Yeah, that makes sense. When you look back on your life, who was there anyone else who really influenced you besides your dad that really influenced your creative spark for magic in life?
As I look back, I think my role model was my mother's mother. Hmm. My parents were divorced when I was a senior in high school, and I had to move from Syracuse to Nebraska and live with her. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the end of the world. What would I ever do out there? And it turned out to be the best part of my whole life, because she and my grandfather were so stable and nice and honest and hard workers. And my grandmother and I would giggle a lot. It was a wonderful background for me right then.
How did that influence you, do you think, that stability and that?
Well, I think my grandmother, or both of them, instilled in me that no matter how old you were or how poor you were, that you could do things if you put your mind to it and followed your heart. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know from some of your story, there was a time in your life that was pretty difficult, and you've had maybe a few of those, I would imagine. What was one of the hardest times that you found yourself facing, and how did you handle that?
Well, I had quite a few.
It's a good, well-lived life if you have a few hardships, right?
That's okay, because you learn. Mm-hmm. You learn from it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the hardest things was when I went to Nebraska. Mm. Because I left a high school boyfriend and just knew nothing out there. But I think one of the hardest was when I was in the Peace Corps. It was my dream to go there, but I ended up where no one else wanted to go, but they knew I could do it, which was in a jungle village in Ecuador, in a small village. And the hardest part was the climate, because we were just sopping wet all the time, and try to figure out what to do with these people. They had no idea why I came, and was difficult physically. But I was in good shape then. I was 50 years old, and I was in really good shape, so that part was okay.
So you went to the Peace Corps when you were 50?
Yes.
You know, most people go to the Peace Corps in their 20s.
Well, I couldn't, because I had children to raise.
Right.
And so I had heard John Kennedy announce this new idea of helping people in different culture. Mm-hmm. I heard him on the radio when I was married, my children were little, and I thought to myself, ha, I'm going to do this someday. So that was my dream of my life, and then I did it.
Wow.
When they went to college, I went to in the Peace Corps.
Yeah, what's the story about that? I think you...
Well, I took my son to Northwestern, and those days they had giant speakers, and it put his speakers out, and put him out, and all the other mothers were crying. And I said, well, Steve, I'll see you in a couple years.
Because, I'm going to Ecuador.
Because the next week I went off to Florida for training, and then to wherever they were going to put me. And he said, well, Mom, try to write as much as you can and be sure to eat well. And the other, we had a role reversal. Right. And the other mothers were looking at me like I was this bad person.
So I think that, you know, I have a lot of clients who are moms, and I think there is a lot of pressure, you know, once you have a family, to be a certain way and be a certain type of mom and to sacrifice your dreams and to do all that. And I think a lot of women and men, too, lose hope that their life is over. What would you say to that? How did you overcome that? And what would you say to them?
Well, people told me right and left I couldn't get divorced, but I did, because it wasn't accepted then.
What year was that?
That was 1969, when you were a divorce, you weren't a single mother. They never used that term. They used the divorcee, and like I was sinful. And I couldn't even talk to my best friend about divorce then.
Really?
I mean, it was bad.
What made you decide to go through that? How did you do that with all the opposition?
My husband was, he was a nice man, hard worker, but he wasn't including me in his life. So I felt very alone, just raising the kids and ironing his shirts, and off he went to work. And I loved my children and I loved keeping house and decorating it. But I wasn't really married because I was abandoned. So I decided, well, if I'm going to live alone, I might as well live alone. And so I announced it to him, and he said that we could just live separate lives, and I didn't have to go. But I didn't like that idea, so I planned 6 months ahead and made plans. Left with the children. We moved to another small town, 30 miles away.
How did you find the courage to do something that was so counterculture at that time?
I didn't call it courage. It's just wasn't, I wasn't being fulfilled, and I just felt gypped. So I thought, this isn't the way to live, so I'll just figure out another way. But I didn't know what it would be.
And you trusted in your ability to figure it out, it sounds like.
Well, I was sort of born that way.
Apparently. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think that, that's a tremendous resource that you seem to have inside, that I think probably we all have that inside, when the calling in our soul, it becomes so clear in our soul, the truth. And sometimes that truth is so inconvenient and not easy.
I think you said it right there. You don't know how strong you are until you need to be. And there's something inside there that you had no idea you could do. And it just comes up in front of you, and then you have the strength to do it. Yeah.
That's awesome. So after that, what happened? You had two kids.
I had to figure out how to support them.
Right.
Because I got a little support, but not much.
Right.
Not enough.
What did you do? You just moved 30 miles away with two small kids and...
It was 10 miles from my summer cottage, so I knew the little village a little bit. And I borrowed $5,000 from my nice grandfather and bought a five-bedroom house with a teasel barn in town, which was sort of falling apart, for $18,000.
Oh, gosh.
And it was right in town. It was near the school. And it was a safe place for the children. So I was trained to be a social worker at University of Kansas. However, I had so many problems, I didn't want to hear anybody else's. No more, please. So in my heart, I loved color and making things pretty in the house. So I took, before I was divorced, I figured this out. I took 2 years of correspondence school. That's what we did then.
Yeah.
With the University of Chicago Interior Decoration Department and got a certificate. So when I got to Scaniales, I started my own business.
Oh my gosh.
And put a little ad in the paper. And there are only to one other decorator in town, and she was very formal. Mm-hmm. And she helped me, actually, because she gave me clients that she couldn't deal with because I was more colorful and out of the box.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it grew and grew and grew, and I was doing millionaires' homes before long.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I love that story. There's so many things I love about that story. First, the risk, the asking for help, and then that this woman was helpful. I think so many times women can compete against one another. And here you are raising small kids, starting a business when women didn't do that, and this other woman totally helped you instead of competing with you.
Because I had no idea what companies to deal with, and she told me which ones, and she was very nice. So I gave her work if I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And in those days, they didn't have a small business office you could go to and tell you how to do things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The funniest part is, the funniest part of all of this mm-hmm. is when my daughter went off, she was older, she went off, and my son Steve and I were there alone. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to make him feel wanted. So mm-hmm. He helped me with the decorating and things like that. And one day he came down and he said, Mom, who does your books? And I said, oh, books? I don't know how to do books. He said, well, I can do it. So here he was, this 12-year-old, doing my books. And at the end of the month, he said, would you like to hear how much money we made?
Wow. At 12? Yeah. He was 12?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What does he do now for a living? I'm curious. Is he an accountant?
Well, he took business in college, mm-hmm. but his main talent is writing. He owns his own writing business.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. You have a bunch of entrepreneurs all around you all the time. I love it.
Yeah.
So after all that, here you are now. Can you believe, did you ever think that your life would be here in Connecticut? How did that happen?
This is a really good story.
Oh, good.
If you want to hear an very unusual, fascinating story, I was divorced when I was 39. Mm-hmm. And I probably only saw my husband 5 times. Mm-hmm. until I got to old age. And when my children thought I should really live near one of them or be secure, my ex-husband died. And he lived in Florida, and he left all his money to my children. He worked from a bank teller when I knew him to the CEO of a bank. Mm-hmm. And so he did very well. He was a very hard worker mm-hmm. and deserved it. So they read the will, and the first thing it said in the will was take care of Jackie.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I thought maybe my kids might give me a bigger car to live in or something.
A car to live in, which you would have been okay with.
Because I kind of lived from hand to mouth most of my life.
Right.
And just did okay. Mm-hmm. But I never could. This is a really, really, really nice place.
Yeah.
And so we looked around, and that's why I'm here.
Oh, my gosh. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So now, how old are you now, if I may ask? Is that rude?
89. Mm-hmm. So next year I'll be 90.
When's your birthday? It's coming up, right?
December.
Gosh, that's exciting. So here you are, almost 90, and surrounded by other folks that are over 55. What's it like getting older, and what do you see happening to other people, and how do you feel different? Because as I walk around here and I see other folks and I see you, there's a stark contrast. You know everyone here. Jackie has notoriously taken down art in the hallway and replaced it with her own art and still paints. And so I would guess that there aren't...
Actually,
a lot like you.
There are quite a few like me.
Oh, that's good to hear.
There are 8 of us that come down to breakfast in the morning. It isn't formal, mm-hmm. but they make breakfast if you want to come.
Yeah.
And every every one of those people are so interesting. It's amazing. Even if you're hunched over on a walker, they come in and all these things, interesting things come out of their mouths. And so I get inspired by some of them.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people that were quite wealthy all their lives, mm-hmm. and everybody did things for them, and they have a harder time.
Really?
And they aren't as self-sufficient mm-hmm. or self-motivated to keep active and keep your mind active.
Mm-hmm.
But we have all kinds of professors come in for lectures. We have all games, pool room, bridge, art mm-hmm. room. There are things here. There's a whole list every week of things to do.
And you're probably doing most of them.
No.
No, not even. Yeah.
I don't like games.
I got you. So what do you do here most of the time?
Well,
trouble, take down art.
Yeah.
Take art.
I do a little writing, mm-hmm. and I Monday we all do art, bring our own art and go down to the art room.
Mm-hmm.
But the other times, mostly I work on my dining room table here.
Yeah.
And I have a nice apartment so that I look out my sliding glass doors into a balcony into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the woods mm-hmm. at the lake, so it's very peaceful and inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you ever have days when you get down?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Right.
No matter what age.
Right. How do you get through those times?
Oh, you just kind of work through it, recognize it, acknowledge it. Usually it's because your body starts to fall apart in the 80s. And then you go out and talk to somebody in the hall and they have worse problems.
Mm.
And then you say, oh, get yourself together.
Yeah.
And just could keep going. Something interesting comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you think about, like, I think there are people, you know, in the midlife or wherever they are in their, from 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're thinking, wow, it's not the 20s anymore. What do we have to look forward to? Like, is there something? Does life end at 50, 40? Like, is it over? Like, what about the dreams and the
okay
passion and sex and life and art? Does it go away?
You know, to tell the truth.
Please tell me something good.
Yeah, I'm not making this up, but I believe life begins at 50.
Really?
Then it gets better and better.
Why? How?
I don't know.
What happened?
Well, I went to Peace Corps at 50, and I realized I had all these talents to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard other people, my daughter said that, my son said that.
Mm-hmm.
People here said, you know, around 50, you've gotten through trying to figure out what you are, and you still look good, and you still have a lot of physical energy, and all of these things kind of come together, and you may start doing things you never thought you would be able to do.
Hmm.
But 50 is great.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
20s, you're figuring out things. In 30s, you usually have a family, and then 40s are good.
Yeah.
40s are good.
Yeah. So what about, you know, I have to ask this question because I'm the way that I am, but, you know, what about passion and art and things like that? Does that keep going?
Well, I never even picked up a paintbrush. I didn't know. I'm self-trained.
Mm-hmm.
But I never picked one up till I was 60.
Really?
60 years old.
So all this art that I see in your home and in the hallway, and even we have some on display at Naughty Shaman at the center.
Right.
You just started painting at 60?
Right.
Oh. See, this gives me hope.
Yeah.
You don't have to do all of your life.
No.
In your 30s.
No.
No.
You can do other things.
Yeah.
Because you have time.
Yeah.
And I did it because I had to, but that's a long story.
Mm.
But I was pressured, and I had to come up with some paintings. And so that's how I started.
Wow.
Printed up some cards and the whole thing. But No, you're through with a lot of obligations. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, it's like an open canvas.
Right.
In the 50s.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you think the worst thing a person could do as they're starting to age? What would really start to create less joy and start to take them down where they've got, you know, a lot of vitality leaking? What would be the worst kind of things that they could start to do that would be bad?
Just feel sorry for yourself. If you think, oh, nothing's good anymore, then you can't do anything.
Right. Right. That makes sense.
You have to look for the glimmer out there somewhere. Because it's there.
It is.
But if you think it won't be, it won't be.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we talk about in Dharma school is that what we give our attention to grows. And what we believe becomes real. What would you say about that?
I'd say that's perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you seen that happen in your life?
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I knew back then when I had to raise my children, I was determined they'd have just as good a life as they had before. Mm. And there was no doubting about it. I just tried and tried and tried, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key. You nail it. Like, once doubt starts to settle in, it can derail you for a while, a week, a month, a year, a lifetime.
Well, I was doubting myself here in the 80s, high 80s. That I just didn't measure up to all these people that were so wealthy and had done everything. Until I figured out that has nothing to do with it. You know, I have resources. Everyone has resources, but they're different. So just use what you have and see how you can help other people even today.
I love that you said that. And maybe, you know, I remember you were at a Dharma circle not too long ago. And one of the things you shared was to share love, the little L. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And there's like the big L love,
yeah,
which is intimate and deep and emotional. And then there's these little L's.
Yeah.
Because you're such a giver. Like, you spread love and cheer everywhere you go.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. How do you think that has impacted your experience of life here almost in your 90s? Giving of love.
Well, it just makes me feel like I'm worth something. And if you don't, if you feel, well, I'm really old and who cares, and I don't have anything else to do, then you start feeling sorry for yourself. So you have to make an effort.
Awesome.
And when you make an effort enough, then it comes naturally.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any other advice that you'd give to anybody out there who's maybe thinking of making a courageous choice, or they're scared, or they're filled with doubt right now? What advice would you give them?
Well, I would say don't wait till you're 80 to begin with. Do it when you can, when you're physically good, mentally good, and you still have a lot of passion. So I've done exciting things right up to 82.
Yeah.
But physically now, I'm not able to go to New Guinea and tramp through the rivers, which I would love to do. But so do it young.
Yeah.
Fill up your heart with dreams, and then make the dreams come true at a young age, and then keep doing it.
And what about when people, or that inner voice in our head says, oh, you can't do that. Who are you? You're too old. You have too many responsibilities. You're too fat. You're too ugly. You're too poor. What do you do with those naysayers inside?
Well, sometimes it hurts my feeling when I do say that to myself.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it makes me feel really bad that I'm really that bad.
Yeah.
And then I got thinking, well, I can take care of that. And I can do something about that. You have to trust yourself.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad to know you. And I just want to let,
glad to know you.
I know. It felt magical, our meeting,
I know.
Didn't it?
It
was very random and not random at all.
No, actually, we came to your place because we thought it might be funny. Because we saw your ad and it said, Naughty Shamans. And Randy and I, my daughter, said, who are naughty shaman? Is this a joke? Let's go there. That might be fun. But we didn't know they were authentic and made an extensive change in my life, Natalie. And as with my daughter, it switched her right around. And we're so grateful.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so glad. Well, yeah. I'm so grateful for you too. And I'm really excited that you're going to be sharing even more stories and wisdom with, I think, decade by decade, right?
Yeah.
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 I love it. I love it. Travel, sex, and rock and roll decade by decade. Can't wait. So that talk is coming up on January 28th at the center from 1 to 2. Mm-hmm. Right? So
yes.
We only get an hour of your precious time, and I'm so grateful for that.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in tonight, and thank you, Jackie. I just think you're awesome, and I love you very much. Thank you for all that you're doing.
I enjoyed talking to you.
All right. All right. This is Natalie signing off from Naughty Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred a little bit wild and totally real.